And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Nerdtastic Podcast, Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello and welcome, our two whole brave people who regularly listen to this podcast. Thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate your loyalty.
We have two people?
I don't know. At least I know of at least one person that listens every week when it's up. Maybe two, so I'm going to go with two.
Hey.
Look at that. Obviously not including the two of us. Anyway.
You actually act like I listen to anything that I record.
Of course you don't. Anyway. Today we're continuing our journey through the MCU starting with phase one. And what better way to, you know, continue this journey of phase one than to talk about my husband. I mean, Captain America. And so this is also, as with Iron Man, as with Hulk, as with Thor, this is a movie that was in production back in the 90s. But first, there was a lawsuit between Joe Simon and ownership of Captain America and Marvel. Then there was the Writers Guild strike. So there's a lot of things that eventually delayed the movie until finally in 2011, we get our beautiful, beautiful Captain America. And this is a character I am, I think, most familiar with out of the entirety of the history of the characters from, the first phase. So with that, there will be a lot more me ranting about why things are not like they are in the comics.
And I'll just be sitting here, looking beautiful for the camera.
And that no one will ever see.
Unless you ever decide for us to change how we do the podcast.
Maybe one day I could, you know, fix my hair a little bit.
So
put a giant poster behind something behind my wall.
Yeah. So real quick, just so people have an idea of what we're talking about. This is a behind the scenes take real quick before we hop into the movie. We record using Zoom. Zoom automatically, along with doing a separate audio file for us, also records our videos. And it does this really cool thing, depending on who's talking, will showcase the person talking. So there will be plenty of times where you'll just see Sasha talking about...
But
right here, where I'm talking, then she pops in. If I like accidentally hit my microphone or something, the camera will come to me real quick and then go back to Sasha. So it'll have those funny little quirks to it, which I think would be kind of funny. But it's a different take. And I sent Sasha, I think the last one we recorded, the one that came out on October 1st. And I just showed you that I just sent it to you the video and just went, so take a look at this. And you kind of liked
pretty
it.
Funny, I gotta admit. So maybe
special episodes.
When we get to like the end of like the next phase or something, we can talk about doing a video thing. But yeah. That's a separate, like I think, much longer conversation that you and I will need to have.
Yeah, but the thing is, so is that it, just to give people a behind the scenes kind of look at how we record and what we
do. What we should do? We should like do some kind of like phase one bloopers reel of just the random things that we said that in the beginning or
so full disclosure, after I'm done editing the audio, while I keep the audio, like the full episode, saved and archived on an external hard drive, all the excess stuff gets deleted right off the bat for memory space.
Anyway.
Let's be honest. I record 5 podcasts.
Yeah, that's a you problem. That's not a me problem. Anyway, so we're talking about Captain America, the First Avenger. And like I said, there's many things that delayed this movie, but finally it happened. And before we get to the plot, let's talk controversy. And you can see where I'm going with this. Chris Evans, who the Marvel nerddom knew at this point as the Johnny Storm of the Fantastic Four movies, was cast as Captain America. And for some reason, everybody threw a fit. Like, oh, he can't possibly play Captain America because he's Johnny Storm, even though that's Fox and has no relevance. But he's not hot enough. Oh, yes, he is. Or he's not blonde enough, which, okay, I'll give you that one. But point is, Chris took the role, but he took it very reluctantly. Part of it was he didn't want to get boggled down by a very long contract. part of it was because he wasn't really sure if he could do the character justice. And apparently Robert Downey Jr. was actually one of the people that convinced him to take the role. And we are all eternally, eternally grateful for him. Thank you. Thank you. So Chris took on this role, and we'll talk a little bit more about the additional casting and changes that were made from the comic to the screen. So let us begin. We open in the icy tundra of Norway. I don't know. Somewhere where it's really cold.
So it's Norsgaard, Norway, which came back in Endgame.
Oh, yes, it did. Yes,
because
it did.
We talked about it on my other podcast, The Experience, when we did the Endgame review, where New Asgard is Norsberg, Norway, which is where they start the film of Captain America First Avenger.
Right, but we don't start the film off in, like, the middle of a cute little town with fjords. Right. This is icy tundra. This is, like, just ice caps, kind of, like, North Pole-esque kind of vibe. And yep. Two government-esque agents arrive, and they're being told, like, you know, we found this thing. We're not really sure what it is, but we thought you guys should see this. And they're like, oh, can we dig it out? Can we, like, pull it out and see what it is? And they're like, no, you don't understand. So they drill, like, a hole with a laser. That was pretty cool, actually, as it rotates. There's, like, zoom, zoom, zoom. And they go down. And they see this, like, it's a ship. Like, we saw the outside of it. And then they go inside. And the inside is really interesting because we're not really sure what's going on. We see there's, like, a cockpit. There's a place where, like, somebody's sitting or should have been sitting. And one of the guys clears some of the ice away. And you can kind of see, like, the shield, cap shield. And the guy goes, call the general or whatever it is. He's like, it's 3 a.m. He goes, he's going to want to see this. And then we flash to, what is it, 1944?
43.
Oh, nope, I'm sorry. We actually flashed to Norway, 1942.
Yes, that's what it was, Norway 42.
Basically, this one guy runs into this castle. We're still in Norway here, folks. And it's a really cool-looking castle. Like, the inside is really cool. There's, like, this casket, and there's, like, this really pretty design on the wall. And basically, there's this old guy who is, like, the caretaker. And they talk to each other in Norwegian about, like, you know, they're coming. You know, the British are coming. Whoops, sorry. Wrong era. The British are coming. Nope, still not the British. It's the Germans.
Hydra is coming.
Yeah. We'll talk about that. So anyway, there's a giant tank and there's an explosion. And the guy who ran in is killed. And so we're left with the old guy. And a bunch of Nazis come in. They look like Nazis. We do not know that they are not Nazis. Well, they're still Nazis. Anyway, so the Nazis come in.
Wait, they're the Nazis until we find out a little later on that it's Hydra is a subdivision of the Nazi regime.
Huge difference. Anyway.
Yeah.
So the two men that enter are like looking for something and they open the casket. And then Hugo Weaving comes in, and we will find out later that he is the Red Skull, but right now he's just a dude in a Nazi outfit. And so he's talking to this guy, and he wants something. And so the Nazis open the casket, and there's this weird cube-looking thing, and as he lifts it up, there's actually something really cool that's done with the lighting, and you can kind of see the hints that, like, something is important. But he breaks it because this is a decoy. He goes, this isn't something that you would just bury. Like, you would hide it.
Yeah.
And so he goes to Yggdrasil, which is the World's Tree, which is this really pretty mural. And he finds that there's, like, a little button where the snake's, like, eye is, which reveals a box that he pulls out. And in the box is the Cosmic Cube, the Tesseract, one of the Infinity Stones, whatever you want to call it. So then, you know, he comments about how the older gentleman has never set eyes on it. He goes, it's not for the eyes of mortal men. And of course, Hugo Weaving's character is like, well, I'm not a mortal man. Ha 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 ha, loophole. And so he kills the guy, and there's a little bit of blood spatter. I guess he was too close, and the blood kind of spits onto, like, something on his jacket, and it's like the Hydra, like,
pin.
Simple thing.
Yeah, it's like a Hydra pin. that they would wear on their military uniforms and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would know because I have one. I have a actual military uniform in my closet for my grandfather.
Very cool. Yes. So we flash to New York City and we see some, you know, cute boys only in their underwear waiting to enlist. And there's a bunch of two guys have like this, they're holding newspapers up so we don't see who they are. And one of the things that says is Nazis take Zhytomyr, which for those that don't know, Zhytomyr is a Ukrainian city, which was like full of Jewish life before and after the war. But yeah, just to give you a sort of an idea of what happens. But luckily, a lot of the Jewish population from that area actually got evacuated from the town in deeper into like Russia. And so they were away. A lot of them were away from the war, hopefully. But a lot were evacuated. Anyway, there's your little note of a real World War II history. You're welcome. So the newspaper is lowered and we see this scrawny kid named Steve Rogers. And his name is called up and we find out that, like, you know, both his parents are dead and he is rejected. He's trying to enlist and he is rejected. And Lord almighty, this child, he has asthma. He has heart palpitations. He gets tired easily. Like, and the guy's like, I just want it. And Steve was all like, I just want a chance. Like, just give me, just do something. And the guy's like, I am doing something. I'm saving your life.
Yeah. And it should be noted that in the next scene where Steve is at the movie theater trying to watch a movie and they're doing like back in those times, what they would do is before they actually showed the movie, they would do newsreels. And one person in the crowd was being disrespectful and saying like, come on, enough of this. Just show the cartoon.
Start the cartoon.
Yeah. And Steve is like the only person who kind of stands up to the guy to where they're,
even though everybody else is very clearly outraged by what he's saying, but they don't do anything.
Yeah. Steve is like the only one who stands up, which sets the tone, I think, a little bit more than when he's trying to enlist.
This is true, but him trying to enlist is significant for a later scene.
Yeah.
This is the prelude. So anyway.
Yeah, but the thing is though, but then they go outside, the guy beats the crap out of Steve, to which then we are introduced to Bucky, James
B. Kim. Who has enlisted. And yes. All right, here's your first tidbit of legit comic book store history.
So, can I throw my one last bit in there real quick, and then you can go into your thing?
Do it.
All right. So one of the things is that after Bucky saves Steve, is that Bucky grabs the reject enlistment from Steve and goes, what is this, the fourth time you've been rejected now? Now you may go into
you're from Paramus now.
Yeah. So now you can go into your comic tidbit.
All right. So in the comics, Bucky is not the same age as Steve, first and foremost. Bucky is actually like 14 and he and Steve don't meet until Steve actually becomes Captain America. And at the training camp where he's at one point, Bucky's basically like the team mascot slash sidekick because his dad is there, was like enlisted as part of that like platoon or whatever. And he died. And then Bucky finds out that Steve is Captain America and wants to become a sidekick. Yay. Teenage sidekicks. That always works out anyway.
And then we also had one other prelude, in that one scene too, which is when Steve holds up the trash can lid as a shield.
Yes.
So that
and
was
the fact that he says, I can do this all day.
Yeah.
Anyway. The other bit that is very important is the fact that Bucky is a combination of it's not just Bucky. He's also a combination of another character, a character named Arnie Roth, who was first introduced in the 1980s by J.M. DeMatteis. Arnie is very obviously Jewish by the name Arnie Roth. Come on. And Arnie was, first of all, later revealed to be gay, but separate issue. But Arnie was Steve's like protector. He was the one that defended Steve against bullies and things like that. And then, you know, obviously Arnie joined up and then they kind of fell, you know, didn't really keep in touch. And then all of a sudden he sees Steve years later, like, you got better. Anyway, that is my first comic book tidbit of the evening or of the podcast.
Sure. Whatever time you're listening to, that's your first comic tidbit of said time of
that day. Moment. Exactly. So yeah, Bucky's like, okay, let's go. I've got a date for us. And Steve's like, what'd you tell her about me? And so they go to, it's not really the Stark Expo, it's like the World Expo. But something to also note is Bucky is in the same unit that Steve wants to join, which is the 107th, the one his dad served in. So we go to the Stark Expo, and this is kind of, there's a scene where they're approaching with the two girls, one of which is the, one of the, who later becomes a Doctor Who companion, for those of you that care about Doctor Who.
Yeah, that was Jenna Coleman.
Who played Clara Oswald in Doctor Who. Anyway, so they go to the main stage of the expo, and they see Howard Stark for the first time. And Howard is, of course, delighted with beautiful ladies. But he does this whole thing where, like, what if I told you in just a few short years, your automobile won't even have to touch the ground? And it hovers for a while, and then there's, like, something happens and it crashes. Probably because, my best guess is, the vehicle, because they made things out of, like, hardcore metal to last forever. That it was probably too much of a weight for the hover reversion technology, the Stark reversion technology. This is, and you see Stark's like anger at the fact that it failed, which is also frustration that we is reflected in Iron Man 2 when Tony is watching the old reels of his father, because it's Howard feeling trapped by the period that he lives in and the time that he is, because he's so far advanced, but there's not enough technology for him to be able to advance it all by himself.
Yeah, but one thing that Howard did say, though, is that he ended up did playing it off going by going, well, I did say a few years, didn't I?
Yeah, which is a cute joke, but...
Yeah, so, yeah. So despite his frustrations, for the sake of show, he was able to kind of... play well, off
one of the
a little
things
bit.
We can say about Tony and Howard is that they were showmen.
Yeah. Also, one of the Easter eggs going into that scene, though, was as they're walking around the fair, you actually saw the original Human Torch outfit.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Yes, you did. Jim Hammond. Anyway, another tidbit from the comics, the Human Torch and Toru were introduced as, you know, teammates of Steve and Bucky. Toro was also like a kid around Bucky's age, and this is also kind of a hint of like the allies and how like there's also comics where like they team up with Namor and everything, because Namor doesn't really want a war in the surface world either. So anyway, lots more comic book trivia coming at you. So Steve kind of wanders off because he sees another recruitment office and decides, you know, why not try again? And Bucky finds him and he goes, what are you going to do this? Is Steve from Ohio? Like, it's illegal. They mentioned the whole, like, it's illegal to lie on your enlistment form. But okay, Bucky's like, you know, if you don't get arrested, come find us later. And Bucky takes the girls dancing. Steve decides to enlist, but this conversation that he has with Bucky about how, you know, he wants to join because he doesn't have a right to just sit back while people are giving their lives, blah, 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 is overheard by someone. So then Steve goes to try one more time, and he gets caught this time. And a doctor named Dr. Erskine kind of comes in, and he goes, you know, it's not it's the five tries I'm curious about. Like, do you just want to kill some Nazis or something? And Steve asked him if this is a test, and Erskine says yes, and says, I don't want to kill anybody. I don't like bullies. Meanwhile, the Tesseract is apparently going to be a great power source for Arnim Zola and the designs that he's been working on for Hydra and the Red Skull, which will like power some amazing weaponry, because this is World War II. It's all going to go to weapons.
Yep.
So Steve is given a chance, and he goes to basic, and this is all part of the Strategic Scientific Reserve, which is going to be like this weird unit that's going to train a group of like super the end result will be an entire platoon of super soldiers. And this is where we really meet Peggy Carter, who is British, which I do not believe she was British in the comics, but I care about as much about Peggy Carter as I do about Sharon Carter, which means none at all. So I don't care what she was like in the comics originally. That's just me personally. Hayley Atwell, we'll talk about like acting on its own later on, but she does a great job. It's an interesting character to play with. She seems to be, you know, pretty high up there for a woman in a combat unit, essentially, even if it's called the Strategic Scientific Reserve. And there's this guy named Hodge who makes a bunch of comments like, "Oh, are we the? I thought I wasn't. You know, I thought I was in America. I didn't know I was joining the Queen's Army." And she's like, "Oh, okay, step out of line over here."
Hey, look, a smartass. You know, hey, look, a smartass.
Mm-hmm. And she punches him.
Which then we get introduced to Tommy Lee Jones's character.
Which we get introduced to Colonel Phillips, who, like, I'm sorry, but Tommy Lee Jones was just made to play, like, high-ranking military officials.
Tommy Lee Jones is just made to play characters like that just in general, like, because he never smiles.
He smiles.
Men in Black, he doesn't smile.
He
doesn't smile.
What is that movie where he plays a U.S. Marshal that has to protect a bunch of cheerleaders?
Oh God.
He smiles in that one.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Anyway, point being, if you remember the name of this movie, please let us know.
We have comments section for a reason.
Please comment. Please.
Like seriously, Sasha wants comments. Nobody comments. Give us comments.
So Tommy Lee Jones' character is, like, very stern. He's a colonel, and he goes, you know, General Patton said that, you know, wars aren't won by, you know, they're won by men or something like that. And he kind of looks at, and he's talking to these, like, big, bulky soldiers, like, they're ready to fight. And then he sees Skinny Steve. He goes, and because we're going to win because we have the best soldiers, see Steve, and because they are going to get better. And you just kind of see this, like, why did you bring in, like, what is this kid doing here? So we see Steve mostly sucking at basic because he's very weak, he's very frail, and this guy named Hodge is just kind of out to get him. There's a part where they're crawling through barbed wire, and the guy just, like, kicks the barbed wire so that it falls on Steve so that he can't move. And, like, Steve's already pretty skinny and scrawny for this anyway, so, like, he should have been able to crawl through easily because he's so small, but then the compression just made it worse. Anyway.
Well, not only that, but he's also having his bag on his back. He has the gun, and he has to keep the gun out of the mud.
He's also, you know, a 90-pound asthmatic.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there is a scene where the drill sergeant brings them towards a flagpole, and he's like, nobody's been able to get this flag in 15 years or whatever. And they all try to get this flag on top of the flagpole. And he says, anybody who gets the flag can ride back with Agent Carter. And she's just casually standing there, like, with a Humvee. And they all fail because they all try to climb up to get the flag. Steve, who was falling behind, notices that it's a little simpler than that. So he just undoes the flagpole from the bottom, waits until lets the flagpole fall, and then grabs the flag itself, rolls it up, you know, hands it to the drill sergeant, and gets a ride back on the Humvee.
Where everyone is just looking dumbfounded.
And because it's really obvious. And Peggy has this smirk on her face, like, he's smarter than all of you. I hope you know this. So Colonel Phillips doesn't believe... So Dr. Erskine is really excited, and he really wants to pick Steve for his experiment. And Colonel Phillips is like, you know, when you brought a 90-pound asthmatic onto my base, I thought it was cute. You'd have him as, like, a gerbil or something. But, you know, wars are worn... You know, it's not a... You know, you need guts to win a war. And so he throws a dummy grenade.
Well, first, before he does that, he's saying Hodge has passed all the tests.
Yes, Hodge. And Erskine says he's a bully.
Yeah. And then he was like, you know what? Then he gets to the dummy grenade and goes, grenade! Everyone runs away except for Steve.
Who goes to cover the grenade.
But here's the other thing, though. And this is something that a lot of people may miss. And it was something that I actually missed until much, much later for, like, Endgame when it was brought up. When Steve goes to cover the grenade and tells people to get back, Peggy Carter is the only person running towards Steve out of concern to Steve. Everyone else ran away.
Yep.
And then he goes, was this a test? And it was, like, dummy grenade and stuff like that. And then Phillips goes, he's still too skinny.
Yes. So Steve is ultimately chosen to take part in the super soldier experiment, which is going to, you know, create this platoon of super soldiers. That's what Phillips says. He says, you don't win wars with niceties. You win them with guts. Anyway, so Erskine and Steve bond in the barracks the night before Steve is about to go through this procedure. And Steve tells him about Hydra. the Nazis' elite scientific division, quote unquote, and their man named Johann Schmidt, who is part of the inner circle. And Schmidt, you know, Hitler and Schmidt both have, like, they really like mythology and all that jazz. And he says Hitler uses this mythos to inspire his followers. But for Schmidt, it is not fantasy. For Schmidt, it is real. And so, basically, Hitler tried to recruit Erskine originally. And Erskine's like, no. And then eventually, like, this Red Skull, you know, Johann Schmidt, he's not called the Red Skull yet, but anyway. So Johann Schmidt convinces Erskine, or forces Erskine, to perform the serum on him. And what Erskine explains throughout this is it gives you a little bit of background on who the kind of man that Schmidt is and the situation of how Erskine, you know, came to perfect the serum. But the bulk of this is that the serum doesn't just perfect your physical traits, like you get taller, you get stronger, you get faster. It also amplifies who you are as a person. So the good becomes better, the bad becomes worse. But also the serum, and so the ultimate thing is that the serum wasn't ready, but neither was the man. But Schmidt considers himself to be like equal to the gods, that he's superior to man. And anyway, so meanwhile, back in Germany, Schmidt is having a portrait done of him. And there's this very poor looking man who's just like, I just want to finish this portrait and not get killed. And he's, you know, painting this portrait. And Zola comes in. And it turns out that Schmidt has found Erskine. And Zola's like, well, there's no way he's going to succeed. And he kind of swallows again. But, you know, Schmidt doesn't want to take the chance, so they've already dispatched agents to get to whatever it is, obviously to kill Erskine.
And real quick, I just got to say, Toby Jones, who plays Zoloff, really good actor.
Amazing actor.
Really good actor. And Hugo Weaving is the one who played Johann Schmidt. And yes, he actually did, I thought he did a very good job with the character as well.
Yes. So here, before we get to the rest of this, next comic book tidbit. While the Red Skull, I think, later does become, like, a founding member of Hydra and whatnot, he wasn't, during World War II, he was, like, Hitler's protege, his BFF, his right-hand man in every way, shape, and form. And he was, like, totally on the cahoots with all of Hitler's ideas. So this whole, it's all part of an elite, it's, like, not Nazis, it's Nazis. If it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, it doesn't matter what the uniform looks like, you know? Anyway, what I really love, though, about this scene is that Hugo Weaving isn't wearing, like, or Johann Schmidt, you can kind of see that something looks different about his head, and it's hidden in the shadows. And when the light turns on, because it flashes, the camera pans back to Zola to comment about the painting. We don't see what Schmidt looks like. We just see Zola looking at the painting. Yeah. We don't see either.
Yeah, because for all we know, he just looks like a regular person.
Exactly. For those of us that are not comic book fans and giant nerds.
Yeah, but the other thing is that obviously for the film purpose,
yes,
it made sense to have that reveal the way it was done.
They do also hint at it in the very first scene where Schmidt appears, which is like the second scene in the movie, because there's a part where like
there's a scar
from... Yeah, you can
there's
see him
the
kind of
scar.
Rubbing his face, like making sure the skin suit is in place or whatever.
Yeah, because like what it is that they had it where right behind his left ear was the scar. And then as you said, you know, he's tabbing at his right jaw to make sure that everything's fine after he killed the old man.
Yes. So Steve and Peggy are driving through Brooklyn. And, you know, Bucky's like, oh, I got beat up in that alleyway and behind that dumpster. And
Steve, first off, you said Bucky, but yeah, Steve, it's so adorable seeing Steve just go, I was beat up in that alley and that one.
And behind that diner. One.
And then Peggy's just like,
do you have something against running away? And Steve is like, well, you know, if you run away once, you'll keep running, something like that. And then Steve just kind of can't talk to girls. That's it. That's all I have to say for that. He just can't talk to girls, and that's okay. He's adorable in his own way. So anyway, they arrive into this like weird fucking little tailor shop or bookshop or whatever it is, like a, and there's this cute little old lady who opens the door. She goes, you know, great weather we're having. And Peggy goes, yes, but I always carry an umbrella. And that's like the code word. And so it reveals this, like, first of all, this is legitimately how people, you know, in spy movies and old world, you know, like 30s and 40s movies of spy crafts and everything, you also always had these like communication and talking in code and everything. So they enter, there's like this like laboratory and there's like a bookcase which hides the entrance, and it's a pretty sick lab. And there's a whole bunch of generals, military people and government people, and Phillips is talking to the senator. And he's like, well, we, you know, something about like, we'll probably dim all the lights if I hadn't, he was talking about how like he wanted a generator. He requisitioned a generator to help power the machine, but the senator was like, I'm on a number of committees and everybody's asking for funding, which is like the most government bureaucratic answer ever, which is.
Yeah. And then I think it was actually Stark that said the thing about how they're going to dim a lot of lights in Brooklyn.
Phillips kind of hints at it though, because he says something about how like they're gonna waste a lot, like it's gonna the cost of electricity or something.
Yeah. But then they also introduce like some staffer or something, or some agent.
Yeah, he does. A very random and very obviously German looking staffer, just saying.
Yeah,
even though the actor is I think Scottish or Irish. Anyway,
he looks very European.
He does indeed. So
it's the chiseled jaw, you know.
So you know, Erskine. Oh, they see Steve for the first time, and the senator goes, "Oh my God, somebody give the kid a sandwich!"
Like the needle's gonna go right through his arm.
Yep. And so, anyway, to make a long story short, Steve goes through this like into this little encasing, and he's injected with the serum. And the first, there's a really funny moment.
Yeah.
Where he's injected with like the first needle, and Steve goes, oh, that wasn't too bad. And Erskine's like, that was penicillin.
But there's a funnier line before that, before he hopped into it, where he goes, did you save me any schnapps?
Schnapps.
Yeah. And Erskine is like, I don't think so. I drink a little too much.
So in the scene where Steve and Erskine bond, Erskine brings this like fancy bottle of schnapps that he saved from Germany. And he says, you know, the first country invaded, the Nazis invaded, was their own, and people forget that. And so they, you know, they're about to, you know, toast to the experiment and everything. And then Erskine all of a sudden takes the schnapps away from Steve and goes, oh, what am I doing? You have procedure tomorrow. No liquids. And Steve's like, okay, we'll drink it tomorrow. And Erskine looks at him and goes, I don't have procedure tomorrow. Drink it after. I drink it now.
Stanley Tucci is such a great actor.
And I learned that Stanley Tucci specifically signed up for the movie because he always wanted to try a German accent, and this was his opportunity. So kudos to you, Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, Stanley Tucci is a really good actor. I do enjoy him in the films that he does.
Anyway, so Steve becomes sexy Steve, and
let's put it in perspective real quick. You know, he goes from skinny Steve, which was all CGI. Like, that was actually...
Actually, it wasn't all CGI. Here's what happened. They had a body double first that they filmed doing the stuff Steve was doing. Then they filmed Chris Evans, sexy, tall, and beautiful Chris Evans, doing the exact same thing. And then they CGI'd his head onto the other guy's body. And then CGI'd it all together. So there's a lot of things going on here.
Yeah, but still, the one thing that a lot of people hated was the fact that they did that. And I was like, but...
How else were they supposed to do it?
Exactly. Like, honestly, I have the perfect build to make fun of for the skinny Steve.
And, like, that was one of my concerns when I heard that they were making the movie. I was like, how are they going to do skinny Steve and big Steve? Because one of Chris's concerns was he didn't want to have two actors play the same character, which I agree completely. I think it would have just been frustrating and annoying. So in this case, you kind of have just a body double to play Steve. But it's still Chris's body. It's still Chris's words and all that jazz. And it's really cool seeing how they did it. There's some behind the scenes photos that I recommend you guys look up. They're really cool. So there's one moment where Peggy runs down because she thinks, oh my God, Steve's dying or whatever. And sexy Steve comes out. And so Stanley.
Well, no. First, before he comes out, Steve yells out, no, don't stop. I can take it.
Yeah, he can take it because Steve is very self-sacrificing and annoying in that way.
And then you get sick, but because of his self-sacrifice, that's why you get Sexy Steve.
This is true. Anyway, so he runs down, and there's this little moment, which is really funny, actually, where she, like, wants to touch the pecs, but then, like, pulls her hand away. And the best part of that scene is that it was not in the script. This was purely, like, what's the word I'm looking for? It was just spur of the moment thing that Haley did just because Chris looked so attractive. Like, that's it. And then she kind of plays it off.
And he was just glistening. I mean, it's like she sees him glistening and she's like, ooh, pretty. as Sasha starts fanning herself off.
What can I say? These movies just have a lot that appeals to the female mind. Anyway.
Calm down now. Calm down.
Anyway. So right as everybody's celebrating and the senator is so happy, you know, everybody else joins in, and this additional guy that the senator introduced to Colonel Phillips leaves something that looks like a cigarette case on the chair. And then, let's see here, checking my notes. So point being that the guy kills Erskine and steals the formula. And then
after doing it, after doing the distraction with the explosion.
Yes.
Because the explosion came first because Erskine noticed the Hydra agent.
He noticed the guy, and then the bomb went off, and then, yeah.
Because he used the lighter as the ignition.
Yes. Things are really nitpicky details that really aren't relevant to the overall story. So Steve races after this guy, and he's got a new body. So watching him, like, run and, like, fall into a storefront was kind of funny because he's still figuring out how this body works.
And he says sorry so many times while doing this.
That's really cute. So they chase him down. There's a thing where, like, Steve is literally holding onto a car as the guy's shooting bullets, and then he keeps running. He abandons the car and he grabs the kid as a hostage and just, like, tosses him over into the harbor. And Steve runs after the kid, and the kid's like, go get him, I can swim. And then
that was kind of cool.
Steve holding up the door of the taxi as the guy is shooting at it. But point being, oh, and then the guy gets into a submarine because, you know, Nazis and submarines. But Steve goes in after him, pulls him out. And so the good news is Schmidt did not get the serum. And that's all that matters. But the key point is that the guy swallows a cyanide pill and says, Hail Hydra.
Oh, no. He actually says, cut off one head, two.
And two more will grow in its place. Hydra nonsense.
Yeah.
So this is the part that I really don't understand in terms of the writing of this movie. I know they wanted to keep Steve as, like, this underdog character for a little bit longer, but they have a perfect soldier, like, ready to go, perfect human specimen. And Phillips just decides not to do anything with him. Well, like, they take a whole bunch of blood samples and what? Just, like, expected him to live as a lab rat for a while? Like, it makes no sense.
Yeah, that's pretty much what Phillips said. Phillips was like, you're a lab rat. You know,
it's really annoying. But anyway, and then the senator guy, senator something not important. The senator was like, "I can help you, Steve." And I'm like, "Oh, great! You know, maybe he's clearly got a hand in the DoD. You could get this kid stationed, literally with any platoon, anywhere in the face of the two fronts that they are fighting World War II in." And none of that happens. Instead, Steve becomes a circus monkey. I mean, granted, it does give us a very cute little Star Spangled Man with a Plan dance musical number, which I appreciate, but I just don't get it. Like, he's perfect. You could send him to literally a war zone. You could send him to liberate a concentration camp, which, funny enough, Bucky and Steve did in the comics. And speaking of, apparently in the original script, there was a plan to have two cameos by two very specific characters. Do you want to guess which ones they are, Michael?
Shoot. And real quick, the senator's name is Senator Brandt.
Yeah, whatever. Anyways. Okay. So do you know who the two characters are that should have had who were supposed to originally have a cameo in this movie?
No idea.
Think about it. What two obvious Marvel characters were involved in any way, shape, or form in World War II?
Wolverine and Sabretooth.
Half right. Wolverine was one character. Magneto was the other one.
That's right, because Magneto, as I read on one of your Tumblr posts recently, they really like to bring up the fact that he's a Holocaust survivor.
Which they don't even really point out anymore. They're just like, oh, I'm a victim of genocide. Like, hey, generic genocide. That separate conversation we can have, okay? I'm on, like, a whole thing about Jewish erasure in comics. Fight me.
Well, eventually in 600 years, we can work on the X-Men, the Fox X-Men universe.
Anyway.
I just like how you're just like,
Like, I do own X2 and First Class and...
I own all of them except for Dark Phoenix.
Don't bother.
I'm going to watch it anyways.
Okay, good luck. Anyway, back to Captain America. So Steve ends up doing like this whole, you know, war bond tour because that's useful of his skills. Yeah, and he ends up at the front. Which, like, ooh, who thought that was a good idea? Like, soldiers clearly, like, these are soldiers. They've just been through hell. They want to see pretty girls. They don't want to see a guy who's never seen a day out of, you know, a day of fighting. Unless you count, like, a movie stage. Telling them how he's going to sock old Adolf in the jaw. Like, really. Although, bonus points to the fact that they do have the iconic cover of Cap punching Hitler as comics that kids are reading or that are included for soldiers, which they were actually both done during World War II. So thank you for that.
Yeah, but not only that, but also for USO tours outside of the pretty ladies that the soldiers were like, they did like the fact that they would get people like Bob Hope and, you know, other celebrity people to come out and do entertainment, right. Like stand-up comedy and stuff like that. But like,
you had singers, you had actors, yeah. You had comedians. But Steve is really none of those things.
Nah, he's a lab rat.
A pretty face to sell war bonds. I'm sorry. I love him to pieces, but that's all.
Yeah.
Anyway, and there is like some interesting points of like Steve being like an actor as well, which I thought was really random and hilarious. But you know, you need a propaganda film here or there. So anyway. Steve is like sitting and like sketching of himself as like a monkey on a unicycle.
On a tightrope.
He sees Peggy and Peggy says, you know, you were meant for much more than this. And like, what are you doing with your life? And Steve is like, you know, war bonds go up so many percentages every new city I visit. And she's like, is that Senator Brand I hear? And she says, well, you know, these men have been through, and Steve like notices the guys because he saw them on stage and he says, you know, these guys look like they've been through hell. And she says, you know, these guys more than most, what you're looking at is, you know, what's left of the 107. So light bulb.
Bucky,
exactly. So Steve runs into Centerfeld's office and he's like, James Buchanan Barnes. And Phelps is like, oh, look here, the chorus girl's here. And Steve, basically, Bucky has been captured by Hydra. And he's like, okay, what's the rescue plan? And Phillips is like, winning the war, that's the plan. Yeah. So
yeah, about that.
Basically it's like 100 miles over the neutral zone into, you know, enemy territory, and there's like this creepy, like pretty badass like facility. And they can't just like go and break in. But Steve decides to. So Peggy and Stark take him on a plane and they drop him. He's like, okay, as soon as I'm off, you need to turn around and go straight back. And Peggy's like, you can't give me orders. And Steve goes, the hell I can't. I'm a captain. And Senator Brand did technically promote him.
Yeah. Legitimately.
Legitimately, which is really weird because like you go through the whole thing of promoting him to captain, but you won't send it. Okay. Senator Brand is just awful. We'll just say it right there.
But he gets a little revenge on Brand, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Yes, we will. So anyway, meanwhile, Stark is like, hey, want to, you know, get a late night fondue? And Steve does not know what a fondue is, which is kind of adorable. So Steve gets dropped off. He has like some kind of homing beacon he can use to call for backup or for an extraction. And he infiltrates, and you just see him just like walk through these guys with very minimal effort. And it's a pleasure to watch.
He then gets inside to where,
oh, there's one thing we forgot.
Yeah.
So the Nazis show up to see Schmidt.
Yeah.
And Schmidt like walks him through that he's developing these weapons and there's like a map with all his targets and the guys are looking because Berlin is on this map and they're all like
so it is
and they're like the Führer how has the Führer put it this red skull has been indulged enough and then you get the whole Berlin is on this map moment And then he goes, you will be brought before the Führer himself. And then he gets vaporized. And then they all get vaporized.
Yeah, but one of the interesting things about this was that the speech that Schmidt is giving these Nazi officers is that he's saying that, like, these weapons are going to eliminate his enemies.
Yep.
Not the Führer's enemies, but his enemies.
Yeah.
And that was, like, one of those interesting things of, like, okay, they're trying to move away from being the subdivision of the Nazis to becoming its own big thing.
He does say something about how, like, he no longer, you know, cares about the Führer's racial, you know, superiority rhetoric nonsense.
Yeah.
Which is, like, again, still Nazis. You just decided to be more hardcore and kill everybody instead of the undesirables. Like, you're not that special.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Steve is... First of all, he steals the helmet that has an A on it from the USA girls, which was funny, but... So he infiltrates the facility, and he finds the prisoners... that are held in this facility that are not Bucky. One has a beret and he's very clearly British looking. And one has this bowler hat, and that's of course Dum Dum Dugan. And so we have the introduction of the Howling Commandos.
Yeah, so you're introduced to Timothy Dum Dum Dugan, who's played by Neil McDonough.
He's an amazing actor.
Gabe Jones, played by Derek Luke, Jim Morita, played by Kenneth Choi, J.J. Field, who played James Montgomery Fallsworth, and Jacques Dernay, who was played by Bruno Ricci.
Yep. So, Steve, like...
And I do agree, Neil McDonough is an amazing actor.
Yes, he is. So, Steve, like, breaks them out of prison. He goes, who are you supposed to be? And he goes, oh, I'm Captain America. And they're like, oh, why are you qualified to help us? He goes, oh, I personally punched Adolf Hitler 200 times. Because that makes sense. But what I love about the scene, though, is... when the doors open and everybody's being released, Dum Dum Dugan looks at Jim Morita and goes, we're taking everybody. And he pulls out his dog tags and says, I'm from Fresno, Ace. Which is just such a real... So, ding, 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 history moment. After the bombing of Pearl Harbor, Japanese Americans were put in internment camps in various parts of the Western United States. Their property was illegally seized by the United States government. And their constitutional rights were denied for the simple fact that they were Japanese. A lot of Japanese men joined the U.S. Army and took a quote-unquote loyalty oath in order to get out of these camps and to show that they were patriotic Americans.
Yep, and one obviously famous Japanese American who was put in internment camp
is George Takei.
Yep. So... And he talks about it all the time.
So this brings up that point. So Morita is bringing that point up. Dum Dum's like, oh, you're an American. Okay, fine. And so you see the Howling Commandos are, well, we don't know that they're going to be a group. The words Howling Commandos are not even mentioned in this movie, but that's beside the point. So we have a French guy, a British guy, and three Americans. And they are, you know, they manage to get weapons and they're fighting against the Hydra agents and whatnot. And, but because Steve is infiltrating the base, the Red Skull activates like a trigger thing to, you know, self-destruct sequence. And as Steve is kind of running through the facility, he actually glances at Zola, who's running from another room. And so Zola runs away and Steve runs into the room that he was just in and he finds Bucky while also seeing a map with all the targets. And Bucky's obviously delirious, and it's really funny. He goes, what happened to you?
I joined the army.
Yep. It's just such a great scene. I love it. And so they return. So Bucky and Steve are trying to get out, and there's a moment where he runs into the Red Skull, and they actually communicate for the first time. And the Red Skull, of course, pushes this... so this is the part where first he sees Schmidt and they start talking, so Erskine's experiment worked a second time, blah, 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 blah. And then he just pulls this face masks off and you see this beautifully constructed red skull head.
Yeah. And while he's doing that, of course, he's also saying that, you know, that he was the true form of perfection of Erskine's work.
Yeah.
And that Steve is though. Yeah, and that Steve was just kind of second rate.
Yep. So anyway, everybody comes back, but what's really funny is the next scene after this. So, you know, obviously Bucky and Steve get out, so does Schmidt and Zola. And they walk straight back into camp. You know, some of these men need medical attention. But before all of this, is Colonel Phillips is writing a letter to General Senator Bran.
Well, before that, actually, there's a really good line between Schmidt and Zola, mm-hmm. where they get to the elevator and they get up to the part where the little helipad is.
Yeah, and it's only built for one. And so Zola's like, wherever I sit. And Schmidt just hands him the keys to his, like...
He just drops the keys in his hand and goes, not a scratch. Not a scratch.
So I
thought that was a funny line and stuff like that.
It is. So Phillips is writing his letter. I regret to inform you that Captain America is missing in action. Or Captain Rogers. And then Peggy walks in. And they have this really funny conversation about, like, you know, you just killed an American icon and blah, 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 blah. And she's like, with all due respect, Colonel, I don't regret my actions. She's like, you did the... And Phillips is like, you did this all for a pretty faith, for a pretty face. And she's like, oh, it wasn't that. I had faith. And then everybody's, like, screaming, like, oh, my God, they're back. And you see Hodge, that he's still in this unit, but, yeah. And then so everybody's rescued, and the men get medical attention that needed, and Bucky goes, let's hear it for Captain America. And the next scene is, they're, like, let's see here.
The next scene, if I remember right, is supposed to be Steve getting the Medal of Honor from Senator Brandt, which, as they introduce Captain America, Brandt's assistant comes out.
And says he's not there.
And, well, just kind of whispers something, and it was like, because you don't really hear him say anything. And because you don't hear anything from Senator Brandt and his assistant, the people in the crowd are going like, what's going on? Which then Stan Lee does get a nice little line of going, I thought he was taller.
I thought he'd be taller. Yeah. And funny thing enough is that in that scene, Lee's dressed as like a general, like a high ranking, like general.
Yeah.
Anyway. So we go back to Steve, and now he's like, you know, this is great. They're putting a team together, and, you know, we'll give you the best men, says Colonel Phillips. And Steve's like, with all due respect, so am I. You know, I'm putting a team together. It's like, I am too.
And this is after pointing out all the targets on the map, or yeah, all the factories on the map. Yeah.
So Steve goes to meet with the Howling Commandos. And convinces them to join the fight. And they're all on board. And they're all pretty enthusiastic. The guy who plays the Brit is also a fantastic actor. He played General Andre in Turn Washington Spies, which is an amazing show about the Revolutionary War. Highly recommend.
That would be J.J. Field. J.J. Field.
Whoever played the British guy, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was great. So as we continue to go, so after they agree and Steve gets them another round, he goes and he sees Bucky sitting at the bar. He goes, and Bucky says, I told you, they're all idiots. And she's like, so what about you? Are you ready to, you know, follow Captain America to battle? And Bucky's like, nah, that kid from Brooklyn who was too dumb enough to get to run away from a fight, him I'll follow. And then Peggy shows up in this like beautiful red number. And like locks eyes with Steve, and they have an entire conversation. And Bucky's trying to like get Peggy to dance. And after she leaves, he's like, I'm invisible. This has never happened to me before. I'm turning into you. And the next morning, Steve reports back to SSI's headquarters or SSR, and he meets this pretty blonde woman, and they like make out for 2 seconds. And
who is Natalie Dormer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Peggy's kind of upset. And then they talk about, then he talks to Stark about like some shield. He goes, I thought, you know, Colonel Phillips tells me you're kind of attached. And Steve says, you know, it's handier than you think. So there's a bunch of like these absolutely derpy looking shields with a shotgun or something with it, or like they fire things and like a flamethrower attached. And underneath all of them is this like perfectly beautiful rounded shield thing. And Steve's like, oh, what about this? He goes, no. And it turns out
that that one's made out of vibranium. It's a prototype.
First they tell, he's like, oh, this is really like light. It's like, yeah, it's a carbon polymer, you know, resistant, whatever it is. And he goes, how come it's not standard issue? And he says, you know, this is made out of the vibranium, the rarest metal in the world. But what you see is what we have. So he gets his fancy shield and he kind of shows it to Peggy. And she just looks at the shield like with like this neutral look on her face, picks up a gun, shoots it at the shield. She goes, yes, I think it works. Much like attitude behind it.
But right before the shield part, there's a conversation between Stark and Steve where Howard is explaining what fondue is to Steve.
No, that happens right after, I thought.
No, that was before.
Oh, right.
Fondue, yeah, because she sees him kissing Natalie Dormer's character, and then he goes, and then they see Howard and Steve talking. It's like, oh, yeah, well, fondue is just cheese.
Oh, yeah, because she's upset. He goes, well, how do I know you and Stark haven't been fondueing? And she's like, you still don't know a bloody thing about women.
Yep. So then the shields come in. Then she shoots at the shield. And one of the great things is that he hands over to Stark some ideas for his outfit. And then...
Which is, funny enough, Steve's designs and sketches are also announced in the comics, where at one point in the 80s, Steve actually decides to have, like, a secret identity. And he kind of becomes, like, an advertising artist. And has like a quote unquote ordinary life where he meets and falls in love with his one and only true love, who's beautiful Jewish lawyer, Bernie Rosenthal, fight me.
But the funny thing is that the cool thing is that after he hands it off to Howard, he actually, the very next scene is them like barging into a Hydra compound. And when you look at the shield, it's all painted up. And it has all the bullet marks for where Peggy shot at the shield. And I thought that was a really nice touch.
And let's talk about these Hydra weapons. They're like vaporizing agents, except I don't think they vaporize, because we know the Tesseract is not a vaporizing thing. It's a teleportation device, meaning that all of the guys that were vaporized probably ended up on another planet and were probably eaten, tortured, and killed, outwardly murdered, or suffocated to death.
Yeah, we don't really know where they went, or they just were vaporized.
Not important.
It's only pointed to one character and one character only.
So anyway, we get this like montage of Steve and the Howling Commandos like fighting bad guys, destroying Hydra bases, and all that jazz. And then there's like a scene where they're about to board a train. And using Jim Morita's like equipment for hearing. And who's the other soldier guy? There's the American. There's Dum Dum. There's Morita, and then there's one more.
There's Gabe Jones, who is the black guy.
Yeah. So Gabe Jones is like a communication guy, and he can speak German and French. So he listens to the communication out of on the train. He goes, "Yeah, Zolan's on board. He just gave them permission to open the throttle because he has to be somewhere." And so they all use this pulley system to board the train.
Only three of them use the pulley system.
Bucky, Steve, and the British guy.
Yeah.
The French guy, because he's the explosives guy.
No, it was Steve, it was Joe, Bucky, and it was Gabe. It was the black guy. Gabe,
you're right.
Yeah, because they only sent the three in because the French guy was the one who was it was the British guy who was actually doing the countdown for each of them to go off.
No, the French guy was doing that. He's also the explosives guy. Anyway, point being, we also learned during this, like, what's it called? Like, thing of, like, them destroying various Hydra bases. Steve has, like, a compass that has a picture of Peggy on it. And, oh, it's so cute. Okay. So they board the train. They fight some Nazis. And Bucky dies. Bucky
to be continued in a later Captain America movie.
Bucky is like, he uses the shield to hit the Hydra guy, and the Hydra guy blasts the shield, and the force of the like ricochet and like the push from the shield, because it absorbs vibration, like knocked Bucky back, and he wasn't able to hold on because there's already a gaping hole in the train and he just falls. All right, let's talk about another comic book tidbit. In the comics, there's been a couple of different variations of Bucky dying, but one of them is like he ends up getting stuck on an explosive missile and it like falls to his death. Either way, there is falling to his death part. So yeah, poor Bucky. Poor dear Bucky. Although we don't really see the part about his arm But anyway, we'll get to that later. So Bucky's dead. They capture Zola. And oh my God, Zola's interrogation is the funniest thing ever because they're, first of all, the SSR headquarters are in London. And so Phillips brings him dinner. And it's like the most stereotypical American dinner. It also almost made me nauseous. It's
like, it was steak, potatoes, broccoli, and a glass of milk. Which, and like, some milk salt and pepper.
And steak is just gross.
I love steak.
Steak is great. Milk is great. These things are great separately and should never be together in any way, shape, or form.
I will agree with you in that respect, because I do love a good steak, but I like to have a soda with my steak.
I could do with like a glass of wine.
Anyway. Okay. Our Angry Orchard cider. I'll go with that. How's that?
Okay. Yeah. So Zola is given the steak, and he's like, "What is it?
Steak.
What is in it?
Cow."
And Phillips has this look of like, "This is like, do you know how hard it is to get this beautiful, like, perfectly cut sirloin, magical thing, all the way out here?"
And he's
just like, "I don't eat meat." And Phillips like, "Okay, I get steak."
Yeah, and it's like, he's just like, "Well, here you go. Here's a," like, he flips the tray around to face and him. Like,
what's he the starts issue? He just starts cutting. He goes, "So what's the issue with you and meat?" He goes, "It doesn't agree with me." He goes, "What about cyanide? Does that give you the rumbly tummy too?" And basically the theory, Phillips like, "Okay, here's my brilliant theory. You want to live." So they send like a fake message to saying that Zola has been remanded to Switzerland. But at this point, Zola reveals the Red Skull's ultimate plan, which is just to, like, rule the world as a god, essentially. But in order to do that, he has to, like, destroy the world. So, let's see. So, the Red Skull has a giant ship, which he's going to use to target everything. And there's one more base left. Meanwhile, Bucky's dead. Steve is mourning Bucky in the same bar that has now been destroyed because, you know, Nazi air raids. And Piggy comes in and she's like, you know, we learned that Steve can't get drunk.
Poor Steve.
We learned that, you know, Steve obviously blames himself because Bucky was his only family, et cetera, et cetera. So there's one more base and they decide to infiltrate it, but they only have 24 hours because Schmidt plans to strike various targets in the US. And basically, like, one of these bombs can destroy the entire Eastern Seaboard. And so Steve infiltrates and gets captured by Hydra. And they bring him in front of the Red Skull, who's like, "Oh, you're so pathetic. You just got captured. Punch your face." He goes, "And what makes you so special?" He goes, "Oh, I'm just a kid from Brooklyn." And the Red Skull just, like, punches him in the face. And Bucky's like, "I can do this." And Steve's like, "I can do this all day." And the Red Skull's like, "Oh, well, I'm sure you can, Captain. But you see, I have other things to attend to."
No. His actual line was like, I'm sure you can, but I'm on a very tight schedule. I can't do the full German schedule. Accent.
It was a schedule. Anyway.
Well, even the way he said tight was a very German-esque way. This is true. Yeah. So that was the thing. He was on a tight schedule, so he couldn't fight.
The Howling Commandos, like, break through the window, and there's, like, fights between Hydras and things. And Steve goes after the Skull. So they steal, Phillips and Peggy, like, steal his car, and there's, like, this really cool moment where there's, the car is going parallel to the plane, and Steve is trying to get through to get inside the plane. And at the very last minute, Phillips, like, has to turn the wheel so that they don't fall off the cliff of the runway. So there's bombs on this plane. There's a, like, some pretty epic fight between Steve and the Skull. And basically Steve, like, hits the like battery power pack that the Tesseract is attached to, and it, like, does something, and I think it, like, triggered the actual power of the Tesseract. And you see, like, space and things, and the Red Skull holds it and he gets teleported away to where we will find out at a later date. Infinity War. So Steve, there's also, of course, a moment right before Steve gets on the plane where he kisses Peggy. That is important for some reason.
But you got a great line out of Phillips going, don't look at me, I ain't kissing you.
Yeah, this is true. So basically, although the Tesseract falls through the plane into the ocean and the skull is gone, the bombs are still powered, as far as I understand, because I don't see any other reason other why he would dump the plane the way that he did. Because we know that the weapons don't actually need to be connected to the Tesseract directly in order to be, like, used. So
yeah, because the power is already in them.
Right. So that means that the Tesseract is more of like a charging battery than a direct source. So that means that the bombs, although the Tesseract is gone, are still charged up with enough juice to destroy the entire Eastern Seaboard. So Steve and two of the bombs, one for New York and Chicago, were already disabled and destroyed with the Hydra agents when Steve was infiltrating the plane. So Steve ends up having to put the boat in the water or into the ice and crashes the plane so that nobody else dies. And there's, of course, a moment where he's like on the phone with on the like radio with Peggy. And you talk about comms. Meeting at the sport club. Huh?
They're on the comms.
Comms, whatever.
Yeah.
On the radio, technically. Back then it was radio. So point being that Peggy is the last voice that Steve hears and he crashes and Peggy cries. And then we kind of see the trajectory of the plane and how it like falls deeper into the snow and Steve dies and the war ends. Stark is shown to be searching for Steve in this giant boat, but he finds the Tesseract first and he says, okay, we found the Tesseract, next grid point. And just, we got to keep looking. So we know Howard loves Steve.
Which we also find out a little bit more later on in the MCU, because Tony references that a lot.
Yep. This is the guy my dad never shut up about. Anyway, so...
That's the next episode, right?
It is, actually. So, finally, before we get to the, like, sort of the final scene of the movie, the final, like, World War II scene is, I think it's that same kid that Steve didn't have to rescue because he could swim. Holding up the, like, it's like a cover from the trash can and playing Captain America with his friends. And then we go to blackout. And then we hear, like, something on the radio. It sounds like a baseball game. And Steve wakes up. And he's not sure where he is. And this woman comes in with, like, obviously, like, it's just so obviously fake. It's ridiculous. And Steve is like, where am I? She goes, oh, you're in a recovery room in New York City. He goes, no, where am I? She goes, I'm sorry, I don't understand. He goes, I was at that game. It's from 1939 or whatever. And Steve runs away. And even, like, her uniform didn't even make sense. Her hair was down. Like, what were they trying to do even? I think it was, like, a way to ease him in. But, like, it would have been easier if you didn't try to fake it so hard and yeah. Failed epically at it. So Steve ends up running into Times Square. And quickly, he's surrounded by various black vehicles, and, you know,
in comes Fury.
And here comes Nick Fury, and he says something like,
you've been asleep for 70 years, Cap.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I had a date. And then that's it. That's the end. Yeah. And then the after credit scene is our first introduction to the Avengers movie, where Steve is, like, at the gym, and he's having trouble sleeping, and Fury comes in and says he has a mission for him. So that is the basic summary of the movie. Let's go through the characters. Let's go through the actors. Let's go through the parts that I loved. Let's go through the parts that bothered me. Let's do it. So Chris Evans is the Captain America we needed. He's the Captain America we all deserved. He is Captain America.
He is also Captain America on Twitter.
He's perfect.
He does some epic takedowns on Twitter.
Anyway. He really was the perfect choice. I hope that anybody who thought he couldn't do it or, like, couldn't act can shove it, because he's an amazing actor.
Well, there's been a theme. I mean, I think with the exclusion of Incredible Hulk, with Edward Norton, it was a risk with Robert Downey Jr. It was a risk with Chris Hemsworth and Tom Hiddleston. Yep. It was a risk with Chris Evans. It was a risk with Mark Ruffalo when he did the recast for Hulk. It was a risk for when they did the recast of Don Cheadle for Terrence Howard.
And, I would say, yeah.
And not only that, but, like, when you go into certain other, like when we get a little deeper into the MCU and more characters are introduced, there are also big risks too, because like Paul Bettany, who does the voice of Jarvis, you know, he was actually told by a big Hollywood producer that he would never have a career anymore. Yep. And he's actually a really good actor.
He's an amazing actor. So like, and I really don't understand.
When he got casted as the voice of Jarvis, that was a resurrection of his career. You know, and that was a risk. So like, the number one thing that we've seen a lot of is that like these main people that have been casted, with the exception of Edward Norton, who I thought was perfect for his role, in my opinion, and he wasn't so much of a risk because he's always been known to do great work. A lot of people were curious and a lot of people were nervous, and everyone who they've picked in the MCU has pretty much nailed it out of the park.
Yep. And we can talk about like casting that worked and casting that didn't as we like get deeper into various movies of the MCU, but
yeah.
So Steve was great. Hayley Atwell does a great job with Peggy. She's not just there to be the love interest, but she's basically just there to be the love interest. Don't get me wrong. She does stuff. She punched a guy. Okay. But she
killed that one guy with that one shot when the guy was driving away.
Yeah, she did. So like, she's capable of, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, she got her own spinoff years later that lasted 2 seasons. It's called
Agent Carter. Yeah.
Overall, like, she's okay. I don't think she's as interesting as certain comic book fans believe. And if this gets me hate mail, by all means.
We have a comment section. Go for it. Just be respectful, at least. Don't be a dick.
I'm not trying to start a flame war, but I'm just like, I'm just not impressed. Like, okay, she's great. Like, we needed a girl in this movie.
Let me ask this to you real quick, because obviously I don't read as many comics and stuff like that like you do. But for Peggy Carter and the whole Captain America mythos, how involved is she in Captain America, in the mythos of the comics?
In the present? None at all.
Well, no. I mean in general. Like, in the past, to like from the very beginning of Captain America when they were doing the comics back when he started to now. Like,
I know they had a romance at one point in the comics, and I'm not like I haven't read every single issue of Captain America. There's a lot. And someone can correct me. Like I said, I think she was a love interest at one point, but I don't think it was the one that got away kind of a situation that the MCU makes it out to be. I think she was like the first love, but I definitely, I never got the impression that she would have been the it love, especially because Steve later dates her niece, Sharon. And again, his one and only real true love, Bernie Rosenthal. So, you know, Steve has romantic involvement with other characters, and like, I think they just built her up to be a little bit bigger than she actually was.
My question wasn't really more towards the romantic side, but like as like a supporting character outside of romance.
Again, I haven't read everything. The stuff that I have read did not involve her. So I think she was that one character. Like I said, I think she was mostly there to be just a love interest and as a like supporting character, but more a love interest than a supporting character, I would say. But again,
so anyone listening,
somebody who's obsessed with Peggy Carter could probably correct me and tell me that I'm wrong and call me names.
So anyone listening, without being a dick.
And don't call me names.
And don't call her names or me names for not knowing. Tell us in the comments so we can get an edumacation.
Anyway, so again, I think Hayley Atwell did well with the character with what she was given. She's definitely not a character that I dislike. I think this is one of the cases, I mentioned this with Loki, like, I like Tom Hiddleston as Loki, but the fandom does not make me want to like Loki, and I think Peggy's one of those characters, because I think they build her up to be more interesting than she actually is. But like I said, I appreciate Hayley Atwell, I like her performance. Tommy Lee Jones was freaking born to play this role.
Tommy Lee Jones can't do wrong. Like, I've never seen a movie that he has done where I've gone, wow, Tommy Lee Jones sucked.
Yeah,
because it doesn't exist.
It really doesn't. That's not the kind of actor that he is. So Colonel Phillips is very stern, very like, I would say he's more MacArthur than Patton, but I could totally see Tommy Lee Jones playing General Patton. Like, I think Tommy Lee Jones actually also played General MacArthur in a movie, but I might be wrong.
I'll look it up.
But point being that he did a fantastic job. I loved his interactions with Erskine. I loved the attitude he gave to Steve and to the senator, even if, like, I was frustrated by his attitude towards Steve because he was clearly more useful than General Phillips gave him credit for, and I don't know if that was ego or just frustration because he didn't get the army that he wanted, but still. He was pretty cool. I wish we could have seen a little bit more of...
The movie is Emperor, and that came out in 2012, where he played General Douglas MacArthur.
Thank you. I know I was right.
He also played Thaddeus Stevens in Lincoln, and I thought he did great with that role, too.
There you go. All right, so he's, again, amazing actor. The character was great. Stanley Tucci, we talked already about. He was great at playing Dr. Erskine. It's a very minor role. There's not much to do with it, but it was just so great. The German accent was great. And like I said, Stanley Tucci only really took on the role because he wanted to do a German accent. But I think he really came to like the character, and he played the character very naturally, and I really enjoyed that. Sebastian Stan is amazing as Bucky. I'm really excited about the Falcon Winter Soldier Disney Plus series, mostly because I hope we will get to see more of Bucky as a character, because we got a little bit more of him in Civil War after he showed up in Winter Soldier, but just, it wasn't enough to see, like, where is his headspace at now? How is he doing? What is it, like, there needed to be a little bit more of that, like, introspection, which hopefully we'll get with Falcon and Winter Soldier. The Howling Commandos need more love. Just all of them needed more love. Like, I think a lot of people said this, that after this movie, they wanted a Howling Commandos movie. It's probably not going to happen now, but I really enjoyed all of the actors that played the Howling Commandos. I wish we could have seen more of them and their backstory and their personalities.
Well, you did kind of. You did actually kind of, because I do believe all of them did at least two episodes of Agent Carter.
I think they showed up. I think Dum Dum Dugan showed up, but I don't remember if all of them did.
Yeah, because I know definitely Neil McDonough is credited for at least two episodes of Agent Carter as the Dum Dum character.
I don't know. I don't remember seeing many of the others.
It's okay. Kenneth Choi came back anyways a little later on.
Yeah, but he doesn't play the same character, so it doesn't count. Although, how many actors can say they got to play their own grandson? Yeah. Anyway, so there really should have been a little bit more about them, considering, you know, Captain America, there's so many comics out there with them. I think there's also Captain America and the Howling Commandos. I'm so, so bummed that we didn't get a chance to do Human Torch and Toru, but I kind of understand why we couldn't. That's a lot of CGI. The budget might not have allowed for that. And it's a little hard to explain, you know, Jim Hammond and all that jazz. And I think my biggest personal disappointment with the movie is that we did not get to see Captain America actually fighting literal Nazis. He fights Hydra, but he does not actually kill a single Nazi. And that's really disappointing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that we've learned with the MCU is that, you know, there's things that they do, you know, slightly differently, obviously, for the sake of storytelling. You know, some that, you know, a lot of people like, some differences that a lot of people hate, and, you know, and some differences that a lot of people are just indifferent to, and they're just like, okay, it makes sense, so I'm okay with it. So this is kind of one of those indifferent ones where it's just like, okay, for the sake of the movie, it makes sense for him to focus more on Hydra than it does to focus on the Nazis and Hydra at the same time.
What I would have loved, actually, now that I think about it, instead of doing, like, the Winter Soldier in, as much as I love the Winter Soldier, and we'll talk about when we get to
Phase two.
But I would have loved to for them to do a do the movie slightly differently and maybe save the Winter Soldier quote unquote storyline for the third Captain America movie, and but still keep the Hydra element in the second movie, and have that be like in combination with like with the past, with a little bit more flashbacks, and then slowly have it revealed that, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. is Hydra and everything. But that's something that, like, I just thought of now that would have been cool. Obviously, I still love The Winter Soldier. It's one of my all-time favorite MCU movies.
Well, we'll also, and we'll talk more about, obviously, when we get The Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron, and Civil War, because there is a connection between the three. Especially in Age of Ultron and Winter Soldier, there's a massive connection between those two. In regards to the overlying story arc, I don't think they could have been, I think that might have been something they thought about, but it just wasn't going to work.
Yeah. And like I said, I would have loved to see more World War II stuff. Obviously I understand for various reasons we can't. I'm still hoping Chris Evans changes his mind and wants to be Captain America again. But either way, I think this was a successful movie. I think it was fun. People complaining about like, oh, it was dumb for him to put it in the water, blah, 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 blah. We just explained why he wasn't. So you're welcome for that.
Let me put it like this. Let me put it in a better perspective for those who still think it's dumb. Would you rather him drop it on land where he would have killed people and lots of them, or dump it someplace where he isn't going to have anyone killed except for himself?
Yep. And we didn't know how many bombs were still on board. And we know that there was various things that were already broken on the plane. So there wasn't a lot of options. It is what it is.
He had to bring the bird down.
Yep. And so in a way, it also kind of parallels Bucky's death a little bit. But... which is, I guess, one of the things that really does disappoint me, and this is something that we can talk a little bit more about in Winter Soldier, is the fact that Bucky is the same age as Steve. I think, according to MCU continuity, he's even a year older. Is because, therefore, the things within the Winter Soldier don't actually make sense. Because in the comic, Bucky's killed as a 15-year-old. Or a 16, or however old he was. He's a teenager when he's killed. And then... in the Winter Soldier comic, which I can see right here on my shelf right here, is Steve meeting the guy and he's like, oh my God, it's Bucky. But Bucky's older. He doesn't look like he did. So because over the course of being, you know, opened up and thought out to kill people, you know, that's years and years that he's worked. So by this logic, the MCU Bucky should have been like 40. But anyway, that's a peeve of mine. Unless it was like thaw, kill someone, back on the ice, thaw, kill someone, back in the ice.
Which we kind of learn a little bit about that in Winter Soldier, just a tiny bit.
But anyway, so I think that's all that's left to be said for Captain America the First Avenger.
Yep.
I think that there's so many amazing tidbits in this movie. I really had fun with it. It's still a favorite of mine. Yeah, that's all I got. It was just a fun movie.
So, on the IMDb, it got a rating of 6.9 out of 10. And you got the time, the runtime?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how much money did it make?
I don't have that in front of me. I don't think we've done how much they, that's been your thing. You've been the one who's been bringing up how much these films have been making.
Okay. If it's me, it's me.
Yeah. That's like,
so this movie had a budget of $140 million US and it made $370.6 million US dollars.
So they made a profit.
They made a pretty significant profit. So fun movie. If you have not seen it, shame on you. Go see it. And that is all we have for this podcast today.
So with that, where can the people find you on the social medias?
On the social media, you might find me, hey listeners, on geekgirl101.tumblr.com or on Instagram at geekycaptain.
And you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitter at thelindenbaum75, obviously everything for the show, the archive, txhthockey.com/nerdy-notions. And also you can see in advance in the archives what the name of the next episode will be, because I started titling things a little in advance just to prepare for it.
And it's not like it's not obvious what we're reviewing next.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know and haven't figured it out by now, Marvel's Avengers is next. The first official film under Disney.
No, it's not. It's not the first official film under Disney.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure. Avengers was still independent. Even the Winter Soldier Disney have...
Because with Marvel's Avengers, it was the first one of all the Blu-ray, of all the movie releases, especially on Blu-ray, to have all of the Disney set up.
I think the first Marvel movie released under Disney was, I think, Iron Man 3, actually, but... Let's see. Disney had previously gained the distribution. They got the distribution rights to Avengers and Iron Man 3 from Paramount, but they couldn't actually have, like, Winter Soldier, when it came out, was still technically an independent Marvel Studios movie.
The first Marvel Studios film released by Walt Disney Studios was 2012's The Avengers.
Yeah, but Disney didn't have any say over it. That came later because the movie was already in production.
But the fact is that it was still the first movie released officially by Disney. When we talk about release, that's their first one. But the first one actually made, we could clearly say that it was Iron Man 3.
Yes, because Marvel Studios and DMG Entertainment announced an agreement to co-produce Iron Man 3 in China. Marvel Studios moved to... Da-da-da-da. But they also didn't have a lot of influence over anything because Winter Soldier was still independent. So I don't think it was until maybe Age of Ultron, but anyway.
Yeah. But technically speaking, Marvel's Avengers is the first of the Disney era, of technically speaking.
Yes.
On a technicality.
And we'll talk about... All right. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Please tune in next time when we do tackle the Avengers. And we hope you enjoyed listening to my wonderful rants with my lovely producer and assistant, Michael.
I'm an assistant. Yay.
I said producer first. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.